gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, Republic Broadcasting. .org. It's the bank holiday of free speech, because you get a bank holiday when your country gets a new king, I guess. And so go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send the badly needed fundage. Do you get a bank holiday when you get a new king?
We did have a bank holiday, and that's why I'm here on Tuesday and not Monday. And I didn't really do any sort of celebrations of the coronation. I had a few discussions, actually, with people who were close to me. And I do want to be involved in these things. So you're walking around and there's little Union Jacks everywhere. There's big ones in some places. There's children making little paper crowns and people having their face painted red, white and blue. And I want to be down with all of those things. I actually want to get on board with all those things. I want, you know, people to be happy and to be patriotic, and I want to have fun. You know, on one of these bank holiday weekends, I want to go out and have a picnic in the park with my daughter, with other families, and celebrate the coronation. And I also want to immerse myself in our culture, our ways of life, our traditions. But fundamentally, I don't feel I'm able to. And that's really sad. And I think I talked to you about this, about the Queen's Jubilee, and how I was completely conflicted over the Queen's Jubilee as well. So this isn't something new for me. This isn't something where I'm saying to you, hey, Patrick, I feel conflicted. I've talked about this before, because at the Queen's Jubilee, which was, and I've got to say this, the Queen's Jubilee was a lot better attended. There was a lot more hype over that. There was a lot more of a national buzz over the Queen.
70 years on the throne.
Yeah, people love the Queen, and there was a much bigger outpouring over her death. One thing that will be said is this coronation was pretty low key. It was pretty low key. It wasn't as big as you'd think. Fewer people celebrated it, and there was lots of royalists and sort of supporters of Charles saying that the reason people weren't celebrating this was because of red tape and the fact councils were clamping down on picnics and wouldn't let people hold street parties. But I don't think it was. I think a lot of people don't like him. I think a lot of people are against him. I think a lot of people look at Prince Charles in a very, or King Charles now, in a very, very negative light. And I look at that and, you know, I do think that fundamentally, that's because he's so woke. And I hate using the term woke. I think we've said this before. You know, using the term woke would be annoying. It's not useful, because really woke sort of reduces these anti-whites and their anti-white antics to almost a YouTube clickbait level. So, you know, you see these videos, check out the latest woke Marvel propaganda, or look at what they're putting into woke computer games, and you click it to look what they're putting in, and it's not really woke, it's virulently anti-white. It's a narrative that attacks our people, demeans our people, ridicules our people. And, you know, it's surrounded by a load of subliminal messages that are there to indoctrinate our people into sort of self-hate, miscegenation, and a range of other things that we don't really agree with. So, but he is seen by the normies as this woke king, and people aren't supporting it. And you only have to look at his recent stamp collection to see what he's pushing. Now, I am scrolling as quick as I can to find a picture of these stamps, because I actually did a post on Telegram about this. And I do think that it is very telling what he's saying. And when I actually find these damn stamps, I'll be able to tell you what I said about them. I think I must have posted them a few days ago. Finally found them. So he's got four stamps. There are four stamps. And these four stamps are to celebrate the coronation. Now, one of them is very, very normal. It's a picture of people celebrating the coronation, and it's a picture of Charles being crowned. So there is a man in what looks like some kind of ornamental church robe, placing a crown on Charles's head. There are people celebrating at a street party. There are people watching it on a big screen. And there's a man, some form of King's Guard sounding cannons. So that's pretty trad. You've got to say, I like that. The next stamp takes a turn for the worst. And it says, so the first is called just The Coronation, and it's purple. The next is blue, and it says Diversity and Community. And here you see there's one white guy, but there's also a Jew, a Muslim, a Hindu, a Sikh. They're all there. One looks like a Buddhist as well. And this is Diversity and Community. And you see the green hills of England punctuated by a church, but also a mosque, a synagogue, and several temples. So this really is the stamp of, what can we call it, white genocide, or, the cultural destruction of England. The next stamp is red, and it's called the Commonwealth.
Okay, so is Charles going to be the defender of the faith or the defender
of the faith? The faith. And it goes on. The next is the Commonwealth, and this is in red. And this shows what looks like a black woman speaking to a group of people who have arrived here from all over the world. And this one's really insidious because there's a big ship coming to England. It looks like it's obviously England. And there's all these flags and there's all these people and there's a black woman. But also in the stamp, in the picture of the stamp, is a lot of cranes and construction. So the message here is that the Commonwealth brought people to England, who then built England, that England was built by migrants, that it was built on the blood and the sweat and the tears of people from overseas who were part of the Commonwealth. Absolute lies, absolute garbage, absolute anti-white propaganda. Now, the final stamp is quite interesting because this one's green and it says sustainability and biodiversity. Now, it shows farming, it shows a train, it shows a beekeeper, it shows a man doing some farming, there's a tractor. And again, it looks like the green fields of England, and there's a bird, soaring overhead.
None of which will be left after you import all the third world and the Commonwealth.
Well, no, exactly. But you see, when you say sustainability and biodiversity, to you and I, that's a good thing. So we believe we're nationalists, right? We believe in sustainability. We believe in biodiversity. We believe in protecting the indigenous species. We believe in a place for nature. We don't believe in intensive farming. We don't believe in the destruction of the countryside. We don't believe in concreting over everything for new housing estates or new, shopping malls, or to create giant centres to house migrants. We don't believe in any of that. But I think when Charles included this stamp as part of his collection, his thoughts were more along the lines of climate change tax, getting rid of motor cars. And again, the woke agenda, as they say. And I think that fundamentally, these stamps are basically, other than the one which is the obvious him being crowned, are more or less a pop at traditional England, traditional Britain, the idea of the indigenous people of this country, and also a push towards what we're seeing. Because when they say sustainability and biodiversity, it doesn't mean what we think. It means 15-minute cities. It means cameras on every street corner, making sure you're not using your car. It means banning petrol and diesel vehicles. It means electric only. It means turning off, all your lights at 9 o'clock because there isn't enough power on the national grid, because we've got too many people, because we filled the country with migrants, which isn't sustainable, and it doesn't help biodiversity. So all of this, as I see it, is this king coming in. He's not beloved by the people. His wife, Camilla, is certainly not loved by the people, and she is now queen. And fundamentally, we are looking at a new era. But it's an era that's seeding its own demise, because if you look at people and the monarchy, you'd say there's really two types of people. There are people who like the monarchy, and then there are people who are either indifferent to it or are actively against it. So there are pro and there are against, and the against include people who just don't care. And it seems that everything that Charles does is a desperate attempt to appeal to the sort of person who hates the monarchy. So the average person that wants unchecked mass immigration, the average person that wants to think that, you know, every religion should be here, the average person who wants, you know, climate taxes and 15-minute cities, they are not the kind of people who support the monarchy. And you can see that from the crowds that did go to London to celebrate. I mean, like, you know what the newspapers do and you know what the media does. They always focus in on sort of the one black family there or the black guy who's festooned in Union Jacks. But as a general rule, you would say those crowds were 99% white British. They were 99% indigenous. But Charles is continually kicking dirt in the eyes of the indigenous people. He's continually, attacking the indigenous people of these islands. But they're the people who support. They are the people who support him. The people who don't support him, liberals, leftists, hordes of migrants who either don't support him or are indifferent to him, he's doing everything to try and please them. And this is a mistake. Now, I've worked in marketing in the past, and marketing is about reaching, is about identifying, then reaching your target audience. So if I decide that I've got the greatest ever product when it comes to mountain bikes, I have come up with this new type of carbon fiber frame, which is literally as light as a feather, but as strong as the strongest steel. And it makes amazing mountain bike frames. So I'm going to make these mountain bike frames and people are going to want to buy them. Well, my marketing would consist of firstly identifying people who want to buy mountain bikes, who want to hurtle down a mountainside at close to, you know, between 20 and 30 miles an hour, putting their life at risk. And then designing an advert that reaches the people who want to go hurtling down a mountain at between 20 and 30 miles an hour on this feather light, but hard as nails frame. Now, there's lots of people who don't want to go hurtling down the side of a mountain on a bike at 20 to 30 miles an hour. Little girls, pregnant women, pensioners, you know, people who have had hip replacements, people who are faint of heart, the grossly obese, or generally fatties in general. So my marketing would exclude those people, and it would be aimed at predominantly young, fit men who like extreme sports. That's common sense. Now, King Charles is basically the equivalent of the guy who's selling these lightweight, hard-as-nails mountain bike frames, but going into old people's homes and trying to hawk them there. And you're like, what are you doing, mate? These people aren't even in shape to ride, you know, any form of push bike. They wouldn't even want to go on a motorized bike, let alone, those electric bikes that does the pedaling for you. Let alone go hurtling down a mountain at 20 or 30 miles an hour. But that's where he's going. And he's taking his product, which is himself, which is tradition, which is culture, which is the monarchy, and trying to hawk it to people who would never buy it in a million years. And by doing that, he is neglecting, at best and at worst, insulting the people who would buy his product, who would buy into what he is and what he's selling. And I look at stuff like that, and I think to myself, Is it just me? Am I the only guy that can see this? Or are we finally living in such a clown world where loads of people can see this, but no one's going to say a peep about it? Because obviously, if you do say a peep about it, you know, you get jumped upon. I don't know, Patrick. You tell me. Am I right? Am I going mad?
No. That makes perfect sense. So Charles, what is he? He's early 70s. How old is he?
I'm not sure, and I am going to Google it. King Charles.
Diana was born 1961.
And yeah, but he met her. She was 16 when he met her, so that was very odd, really. She was only a 16-year-old girl when he met her. Yeah. He's 74.
Okay, 74. So that means he's born probably 1948, 49. So he was a good dozen years older than her.
14th of November, 1948.
Okay, right. Yeah, and that's what I recall. Now, he's I'm sure he's the oldest person who was ever coronated, because none of the kings, I mean, you've had some long-lived queens like Elizabeth and Elizabeth before her and Victoria. They lived a long life, but I don't know if you've ever had a king who lived much past 70, let alone to be coronated at 74. So he's old. He's I don't know. He might live a long time. He might cling on to that crown for 20 years. Who knows?
But I think he'll have a maximum of sort of 2 decades or just over 2 decades on the throne, and a minimum of a decade. He might abdicate. Some do. I think he'll be looking for 2 decades on the throne.
Yeah. The Japanese...
He is. The oldest monarch at the start of his reign was King Charles III, aged 73 years, 298 days when he became king in 2022. So that was at the start of his reign.
He's Charles III, right, exactly. Yeah. Okay, yeah, Charles III.
That, it was William IV, who became king at 64 years and 308 days.
And didn't last very long.
Let's have a look. He only lasted 7 years.
Yeah. Well, he got to be 70. All right. So now the new crown prince, William, is he popular?
I think William is popular, but there's a bit of a caveat to that. I don't think he is popular for himself. I think he's popular largely because of his wife, Kate. Kate Middleton is very attractive.
Yes.
She is somebody who is not only very attractive, but she is very, very good with the public. So it's one thing being attractive, but you can't be sort of, this super attractive girl, but then also be a complete and utter cow. You know what I mean? You can't do that. She's really nice, though, and she reacts really well. King Charles is one of those people who is a bit standoffish with people, is Charles, but she's not. So she will be amongst the crowd, and a baby will grab her designer handbag and try to play with it, and she'll just giggle and laugh and let it go on, or a dog will jump up on her, and rather than reacting badly, she will pet it and give it a hug and laugh with the owner. And at the end of the day, that is something that wins the public over. And her and William don't seem to be having involved so overtly in sort of anti-white politics, and there was not a I wouldn't say it was sizable, but there was a definite minority call for Charles to be passed over and for the crown to go directly to William due to his popularity. And he is more popular than his father, but it isn't just because of him. In many ways due to his wife, and fundamentally his wife has done an amazing PR job, whereas on the other hand you have Prince Harry with Meghan Markle, and she's done the very opposite. She's done a horrific PR job
indeed. And then you mentioned Queen Camilla, who is not popular. She wasn't even considered, like, she was princess consort or something, as opposed to Princess of Wales for a while, because she was the other woman after Charles married Diana, who was much younger than him. He went for a woman his own age and was having an extramarital affair with her while he was married to Diana. Isn't that correct?
Well, he was originally with Camilla. This is where the interesting stuff begins. He was originally with Camilla and loved her, and they were soulmates. But he was told he couldn't be with Camilla, so he then took on Diana. And
excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats. And even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Married to Diana, isn't that correct?
Well, he was originally with Camilla. This is where the interesting stuff begins. He was originally with Camilla and loved her, and they were soulmates. But he was told he couldn't be with Camilla. So he then took on Diana, and Diana was...
He told he couldn't marry Camilla?
I'm not actually sure. I don't know whether it's that she'd had a child in the past or to someone else. There was reasons.
Had she had a child in the past?
I don't know. There's reasons. But either way, he was told he couldn't be with her. And that resulted, fundamentally, in him having this unhappy marriage with a very attractive and much-loved younger woman. And that obviously ended disastrously. And ultimately, whether it was by accident or something more nefarious, ended up with Diana's death.
So for those who are much younger than us, they got divorced, and then she one day was racing, was in a car with an Arab scion to a rich family, and they were running away from paparazzi in Paris and died in a car crash in a tunnel.
Yeah, and there's lots of allegedlies there as well, because it's difficult to know exactly what happened. You know, none of us were there. There's been lots of theories or conspiracy theories about this. And it's hard to actually work out what did actually happen, because I wasn't there, you weren't there, and the people who were there, well, most of them ended up dead in a tunnel, you know, and why they were, there's always been this sort of cloud hanging over her death on the fact that if the paparazzi were following her and taking pictures, why would her car and her security be driving at sort of 80 or 90 miles, you know, through tunnels in Paris in the dead of night. Now, you and I both know that wherever members of the royal family, celebrities, even Instagram influencers go, people will take pictures. People will want to take a picture of what's going on because that's human nature, especially now, when all these tawdry rags, you know, make huge amounts of money from selling the smallest piece of gossip. Now, she had been photographed many, many times. Famously, she was photographed sunbathing topless on a boat with Dodi Al-Fayed. So when it comes down to it, she didn't really have anything to, she didn't really have anything to lose by being photographed. So the big issue is, why was she racing away in the dead of night? What was it that got her or her driver so spooked that they felt they had to, you know, be speeding like that? Who knows? Well, when it comes down to it, we'll probably never know. And that's where these sort of theories or conspiracy theories come from. But it was a dark time. And had she been still with, Charles now, and had she been Queen Diana, I think Charles would be a lot more popular. I think he would have a lot more support. However, she's dead. Camilla's now with him, and she's relatively unpopular. So I do think this unpopularity of, you know, the monarch is not solely down to him. It's down to, you know, his bride. And these things would be largely righted had William taken the throne. But I still think William shares many of the liberal and anti-white opinions of his father.
Well, okay. So, but you had a bank holiday, and now you've got a king. And so, hey, does the coinage in Britain has had Queen Elizabeth on forever. So now you're going to get Charles's ugly old mug on your coin?
Coins, notes, and stamps.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Elizabeth had been queen for so long that they had to keep redoing it because, you know, the early ones were of her as a young girl.
The silhouette of Queen Elizabeth changed, obviously, multiple times. You know, and she was, Queen Elizabeth was, she definitely wasn't pro-white. Now, I think she said a number of things that were anti-white. However, she was immensely popular. She was loved, and I think she was someone who the nation actually mourned for. And when it came down to it, on her death, there was an absolute outpouring of genuine sadness, of love for her. People did tune in to her funeral in record numbers. And fundamentally, I don't think that has been mirrored. And they did turn out in record numbers for a jubilee, and that certainly wasn't mirrored in Charles's coronation. And I would say that will be, or should be at the very least, a major worry for the royal family going forward, because they are becoming more unpopular, and it is going to be a harder sell for them to the public. I mean, the public spends huge amounts of money every year, housing them, securing them, looking after their properties, their children, you know, feeding them, clothing them. And that is going to become
are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button. Like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? And what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
For them to the public. I mean, the public spends huge amounts of money every year, housing them, securing them, looking after their properties, their children, you know, feeding them, clothing them. And that is going to become more and more unpopular over time.
And so, and it's England, but of course, he is also the king of Canada, of Australia, of New Zealand, Jamaica. Who knows where else? So he's.
Well, I think that will be coming to an end as well.
Well, in Australia, there is a move for republicanism, right? To turn it into a republic. I'm not aware of much of a move in Canada, and Queen Elizabeth's face was on all the Canadian coins as well.
Yes, it was. I don't think white Commonwealth countries will be looking to leave the Commonwealth. I don't think you will see Australia, New Zealand or Canada making any moves to break away from Britain. However, you will see an increasing number of other Commonwealth countries that still remain in the Commonwealth breaking away. And I think there is a large movement in Jamaica to actually break away and to move in a different direction.
Right. Well, okay, so as such, if you're going to count the Commonwealth countries, the British monarchy, they reign over the largest number of people on Earth. Now, the next biggest monarchy would be the Japanese monarchy in terms of subjects, which is, you know, it's just Japan, but Japan's got over 120 million people. And I don't know if you're aware of all the – they have very similar controversies in the Japanese monarchy. The current emperor is reasonably popular, But he has a daughter, and under current Japanese law, only a male can be it's inherited through the male, and only a male can be the emperor. And so the next in line is the emperor's younger brother. The current emperor is about, what, 62 years old or so. He just became emperor, what, a year or two ago? Well, I guess maybe before that, maybe about four or five years ago, after his father retired. His father was the son of Hirohito, the wartime emperor, and he had 30 years on the throne. Hirohito had lived to be pretty ancient, and so his son reigned for 30 years and then just decided to retire. And so now you've got a, you know, 62-year-old emperor, but he has no son. He's never going to have a son, obviously. And so next in line is his younger brother. His younger brother, who I guess is 59 or so. Don't ask me the names. And the younger brother is very unpopular. And then the younger brother managed to have a son. His wife, he had two daughters, and then his wife finally, I guess, like approaching menopause, had a boy. So it's this little boy who presumably would eventually become an emperor. But the family, the little boy is not particularly unpopular, although there are rumors about him being weird or a nerd or something. But the younger brother himself has been involved in all sorts of weird stuff, not least of which is eating exotic animals. So he's got himself something like, he's a president of the Japanese Zoological Society, but he uses his position to import exotic animals and eat them. I'm sorry. I mean, that's horrible. And they were over.
It's not going to endear you, is it? People aren't going to look at you doing stuff like that and think, you know what? This guy should really be in charge of the. You know, that's a guy I could really get behind. I could march to battle behind him. You know, as he marches his way through, baby elephants or
a capybara. No, I mean I know about this because I'm addicted to capybara videos. Capybara is the largest rodent. They're from South America, and they're really cute. They're very friendly. And so apparently he likes to eat them, or he's eaten one. And, you know, I was willing. I'd hear about him. Oh, his brother-in-law is involved in this. I don't care. His son-in-law is used connections in order to get into a college in the United States. I don't care about that. Oh, his niece his wife's niece is a underwear model. I don't care. But when I heard that he ate a capybara, he is my enemy now. He's totally my enemy. So that's what's going on. That's what's going on in Japan. And the I don't know. So their monarchy's messed up too. So he's kind of like the Prince William of Japan, I guess. Not Prince William, Prince Andrew of Japan. Nobody likes him.
No one likes Prince Andrew either. Yeah, he's another one off for obvious reasons.
But that's out of the mix, and this guy is the crown prince. Although, you know, he's only a few years younger than the current emperor. So whatever. I don't know how many people care about that. I don't know how many people care about monarchies. But there we are.
Well, I think, you see, that's the thing. I think a lot of people do care about monarchies, and there's two types of people who care about monarchies. There are the people who love them and want them to remain and want to support them and love the pageantry and all the pomp and, you know, the culture, the traditions and everything that goes with them. And then there are a type of people who absolutely despise the monarchy and want it gone and, you know, want to put an end to this and, you know, be marching around with flags that say things like, you know, not my king written on them. Now, this is the thing, Patrick. Fundamentally, you've got an issue here, because the not my king lot are left wing. They are left wing, pro-migration, pro-multiculturalism, anti-British, because part of what they're doing here to sort of oppose the king is an anti-British move. It's, you know, they are deconstructing, you know, traditional Britain. They are deconstructing what we know as, you know, as Britons, what we enjoy as Britain. And fundamentally, they're doing that because they want to deracinate us, they want to separate us from our culture, they want to take away our traditions so that we are less of a cohesive group and we are more easily able to be conquered. And those people have certain sensibilities, let's say. Now, on the other hand, you have people who are fundamentally pro-monarchy, and they tend to be conservatives with a small c. They are church-going, they don't want huge amounts of immigration, they are not pro-everything to do with multiculturalism. Now, I'm not saying they're all nationalists, but they do have different sensibilities to the kind of people that you know, are anti-monarchy. And one of the reasons they love the monarchy is because they see the monarchy as a way of, you know, basically holding on to culture, holding on to tradition. They love the monarchy because they think that the monarchy is part of what makes us British. It's part of the fabric of our society, and that it's part of our history, and it should be part of our culture going forward. Now, obviously, the king is desperately trying to appeal to these people who want him gone. And by trying to appeal to the people who want him gone, he inevitably ends up insulting those who actually love him and want him to remain as king. Now, that is, by any metric, suicidal. That is a bad call for him to make. And I think he's going to carry on making that bad call, because as he pushes the climate change agenda, the multiculturalism, the mass immigration, and talks about, you know, dismantling what we know and love as Britain. So one of the things that that King Charles has been in favour of is the destruction of our historic statues and monuments, and looking at them in a new light through the eyes of, you know, whether they are culturally sensitive, shall we say that, whether they're culturally sensitive, whether they glorify colonialism, whether they glorify slavery, and whether they should be part of a modern and inclusive multicultural Britain that represents the desires and sensibilities of multiple different communities from all over the world. But I would say the average person who wants to keep those statues would be a monarchist. And the average person who wants to tear down those statues, and if you look at them, you'd agree, are, you know, far left, unwashed, you know, vile people that if you said tomorrow, right, you know, do you want the king hanging by his neck from, you know, from Tower Bridge, they'd all be cheering. So he's getting himself into a mess. And I think the embrace of Meghan Markle by the monarchy, you know, furthered getting them into this mess. And it seems almost as if they are all desperate to further their own demise, which will have some interesting implications further down the line. And you also tend to find, which is quite interesting, and when I say tend to find, that's an understatement. I think I said this earlier, that 99% of the crowds who were out celebrating his coronation were Indigenous Brits. And those that weren't white, that were out, you know, celebrating the coronation, many of them will have been tourists. Many of those people will be people who've come to Britain to see this as tourists. Now, of course, that's a generalisation. There will be some people who are British passport holders that aren't Indigenous Brits that will love him. Of course there will be. But they're few and far between. And I do think what we're seeing here is really the death of the royal family. And that's something that, in some respects, I am sad about, because it is part of our tradition and culture. And I've got some lovely old books that my grandparents left behind when they passed away. And they are books which show previous coronations. They're all beautiful black and white books, full of black and white, these beautiful sort of high resolution, absolutely perfect black and white images of how Britain used to be. And if you see it and you see the uniforms, you know, the mounted guards, the clothes, the crowds of people, those turning out to support the coronation or previous, you know, large events that included the royal family. One, it shows you that Britain has been absolutely transformed, almost beyond recognition, you know, over the last 100 years. Absolutely. You know, you look at these old pictures of London, and it wasn't a different country, it was a different world. But you would also see that the world that went before wasn't just a different world, it was a better world. It wasn't an inferior world. We haven't progressed from those times. We've gone towards this brave new world, which is inferior in almost every way. I mean, technologically, we have advanced. So, you know, you can't argue that technically we are at a higher level of advancement than we were when those old black and white pictures were taken. But in terms of the way we dress, in terms of how healthy the people looked, in terms of the homogeneity of our nation, everything has been shattered. Everything has been reduced to a lower level than it was before. And I was tempted there to say things have regressed, but they haven't regressed, because to regress would be to say that things were once, you know, multicultural and bad, then they got good, now they're going back to being bad. But it isn't a regression, because of course things were never multicultural. Things were never multiracial in Britain. There was never mass immigration from all over the world. There was never entire parts of cities that were, you know, Muslim or Hindu or Jewish or black. That didn't happen. You know, London is now 37% white British. The indigenous people are an absolute minority in Britain. So that's never happened before. And once you get to that position, it becomes even more jarring that 99% of the crowds on the street of London, on the streets of London, celebrating the coronation, are white. That's even more jarring, because it's that 37% that are making up those crowds. Oh, obviously, some people come from outside of London. You know, that goes without saying. But it is jarring, isn't it, that in a city where 63% of the population are not white British and not indigenous, and many parts of London are, you know, white minority as well. So even if you took into account sort of, you know, Ukrainians and Czechs and Poles and other migrants who aren't white British, you know, whites themselves are a minority in many parts of London. And this tells you something very important. Yeah. That these people who have been brought here, these people that the king's bending over backwards for, these people who've been handed everything on a plate by successive governments, they do not consider themselves part of Britain.
They're not to be British. They're coming to make Britain Pakistan or whatever. Yeah. They're coming to change Britain. They're not coming to be Britain. Yeah. Okay. What about... Oh, and I was just going to throw in, I went to the Obama first inauguration. I went to the Trump inauguration. And, of course, the Obama inauguration was bigger, but that's because all the blacks from D.C., which is a majority black city, had turned out. And the Trump inauguration, the people, you'd talk to the people, everybody was from really far away, from airplane distance. So that was a difference. But you just had local elections. And you had these elections. The election campaign takes place during the run-up to the coronation, and the Tories didn't do particularly well. Was there any connection? What are the implications of these local elections?
Well, this is really interesting, and I could have probably spoken for an hour on this. I'm actually just writing a really long article for the Patriotic Alternative website on this particular issue, because there's so much to say. Now, the nationalist and right of center sort of patriotic parties have polled really, really poorly, and people are saying, look, the Conservatives have done really badly, but they actually haven't. We are 13 years deep into a deeply unpopular Conservative government, yet the Conservatives still took nearly 2,300 seats and are still in a position of second place. So after 13 years of unchecked mass immigration, Tory sleaze, the entire COVID debacle, multiple prime ministers, an imposed Indian prime minister, the Conservatives have come out of this with 2,287 seats, with Labour on 2,652 seats. Now, yes, the Tories lost 1,064 seats, so they made huge losses. That is true. But they've still come out of this in second place and in touching distance, in less than 400 seats away from Labour. That's incredible. And I find this deeply depressing. I find this dispiriting. You know, on the three parties that made the big gains, Labour, Lib Dems and the Green Party, Labour gained 528 seats, Lib Dems gained 400.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
The secret to aging like fine wine is in the vines. Ciroc grape seeds and skins contain high levels of flavonoids and resveratrol. Fermentation breaks these organic compounds down into smaller molecules, penetrating these therapeutic ingredients deeper into the skin, delivering faster and more effective results. Our handmade fermented skincare products are formulated with all natural ingredients and do not contain any phthalates or parabens. Similar products can cost as much as $180. At Natural Earth Medicine, we source our ingredients from local Arizona vineyards and cold process our oils to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality product in its purest form. Learn more at our website and try our fermented skincare products today. Visit naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
And I find this deeply depressing. I find this dispiriting. You know, on the three parties that made the big gains, Labour, Lib Dems and the Green Party, Labour gained 528 seats, Lib Dems gained 407, Greens gained 241. The Greens did the best in terms of percentage gain. They doubled their number of seats. But all of those three parties are even more pro-immigration, pro-multiculturalism and more anti-white than the Conservatives. Now, the group that made the second biggest losses at these elections were the independents. Independents and small parties across the country lost 112 seats. Now, that's incredible. So, you know, 13 years into mass immigration, sleaze, COVID, people are tending more towards the pro-migration centre than they are nationalist or, you know, right of centre parties. And not a single nationwide right of centre party won a single seat at these elections. Not UKIP, not the Heritage Party, not the Reform Party, not the BNP. They didn't even stand a seat. Not the National Front, not the British Democrats, not the English Democrats. There were six seats won by anti-migration, by an anti-migration party. And they are called Reform Derby, which are a small offshoot of the larger Reform Party. Six seats nationwide, and they're not even a national party. Now, that's very worrying. And even more worrying is these results were achieved on the lowest turnout I've ever seen in my life. The turnout of these elections averaged between 20 and 30%, and in some places fell beneath 20%. Now, usually when turnout gets lower, fringe parties do a lot better. So at low turnouts, and I always remember this from back when I was campaigning for the BNP, the enemy always used to say, low turnout lets the fascist parties in via the back door. You need to turn out to vote. You need to do something. Don't let these guys in via the back door. That was the common cry from Hope Not Hate, Searchlight Magazine, anti-fascist groups. But here we're seeing record lows, and it's not resulting in record number of votes for outsider parties. In fact, independents and smaller parties were the second biggest losers on the day, losing around 10% of the seats they held nationwide, whereas the Tories lost around 30% of the seats they held nationwide. Now, that's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. And I don't know what people are thinking. I don't know how this can be combated. But it's almost like the British people, the big winner was obviously apathy. The big winner was people staying at home. But at a time when things are so grim, when we've got this cost of living crisis, all these other problems, unfortunately, people aren't coming out to vote. And when they do, they're not voting for an actual alternative. They're voting for worse.
Wow. Well, we'll have to get into that next time. But I want to thank you for joining me today, Mark.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Patrick. It's been a real, real pleasure. And I could have made this a 2-hour show, but unfortunately we can't.
Nope. But there's always next week. So thank you very much. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.